What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Mike Gorman called his last regular season game after 43 years behind the mic. Tommy Heinsohn once told Mike Gorman, "We don't need notes. We're going to talk about what we see." That's what we're doing tonight. One Night in Pinehurst with Brandon Kasten. And we are back. We are shifting from Masters Week over to the NFL Draft, my favorite time of year. And I don't think we could have dialed up a better guest. Maddie and Kasten were just backstage already laying into me a little bit, which I like.
Setting the tone early, making sure we got things under control, keep the guardrails. It's bumper pool. Just keeping you in the lane. That's all. Making sure you can't get in the gutters. It's for your own good.
So, Brandon, welcome to One Night in Pinehurst. How does it feel? You're in Boca.
Great to be here, fellas. Boca's beautiful today. I'm here for a work conference, so not that great. But great to be with you guys. Ready to talk some draft. We're getting close. What, 10 days?
Yeah, I wish it was this week. We don't need this extra week in between. I think it should be Thursday, but that's not my call. Gibby, can you do something about that?
Yeah, well, Caitlin Clark has to go number one first, so we're going to dial back. We've spent a lot of time on the WNBA and women's basketball, and I'm really proud of our work there. But so before we get to the draft, something else happened in between our last episode and the Masters, and it was saying goodbye to Curb Your Enthusiasm. So, Maddie, favorite episode. Brandon, tee it up too.
It's hard because these final episodes of series that you follow for many, many years tend to either be disappointing in the sense that they're just kind of like tying up loose ends. And I think they nailed it being a regular episode, but with a bunch of Easter eggs hidden. Like every Seinfeld and Larry David interaction was incredible. Like every word of it was perfect. Because you could tell they had no idea. The scene started and they just went. It was just them hanging out. And there were so many callbacks to the final episode of Seinfeld that they tucked in. Like they just did a really good job of keeping it a real episode, but like layering in all of the goodbye nuggets. They nailed it. I couldn't have been more thrilled with it.
Wait, so we're talking about the last episode?
The last episode or any of your favorites that like you go back to that like keep drawing you back.
So I hated this last season. And then now
the beginning of it or the whole thing?
So I'm only five episodes in, actually. So okay, I was – and I'm on the fence slow. because I was a big Always Sunny fan. And then they had that woke season. And I was just like – it was just ridiculous. And you know, Mac got jacked and everything. Yep. And they changed the whole – and I think the first four episodes – I actually just watched the fifth because I'm like, you know, I heard it got better.
It does.
The first four episodes were really forced, I thought. The dialogue didn't work. Like that Harriet Tubman thing was just horrific. Yep. It just wasn't good. It picked up steam quick.
I felt the same way you did. I watched the first few episodes. I was like, oh, here we go. We're going to go out with a whimper. Like LD wouldn't do that to us. Stay in because it gets real good. The last like four or five episodes are all incredible. They're perfect.
And that's kind of the point I'm at right now. But the funniest thing though, is that like Richard Lewis died. I mean, he looked almost dead in that season.
Yeah.
He
looked
he was hanging on.
Yeah. Yeah. They propped him up.
He got a lot of face, like he got a facelift at the end there too. I mean, he looked like a skeleton with a facelift. It was crazy.
It was tough. I mentioned it to myself and I was like, who can I tell you this to? Cause it's not great. It doesn't look good, but he had to be there. He had to finish it out.
Who are your favorite characters? I have mine, outside of like, you know, Cheryl, right. Jeff, Larry and Susie, who's your go-to character?
Obvious to say Leon, but Leon. Yeah. I mean, it's just everything he does. Like actually, one of my favorite episodes.
The first four.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Like he gave the series a real shot in the arm when it was kind of like it was languishing a little bit, and then like him and just him as and Larry David like as the odd couple is just hilarious. So yeah, Leon's the obvious choice, you know. But I and even like one of my favorite episodes is the Foist, because that assistant with you know having constipation is just it's so great. And like Leon saying he shot a porno constipated, like all of those moments.
Have you seen the audition where he came in and they were looking for a Leon and they couldn't find one? And he just sat down and started doing exactly that next to David. And Larry David was like, this is the guy. We got it. And it took him like a while to get there, but they found him. Yeah. Like,
wait, they have a recording of the actual.
Oh, there. It's a great one.
Go find it. It's pretty good. It's just them sitting in a chair recording basically the lines and just doing a read. And the whole everybody there is dying. Like they didn't know what they were in for. And they literally picked him on the spot.
That's great. That's
it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go on, Cassin.
Well, the bet, like, and he's great. He's one of those guys that's funnier as in that format or in an interview than he is as a stand-up. His stand-up's not that good. And his you got to watch him. And Gibby, we've talked about this
role player.
The interview with Howard.
Oh, the SNL
long ass dash.
Yeah. So he has two skits. I was telling my brother who was talking about Leon's lines from this year. And one was long ass. And I usually don't swear on this show, but I'm going to long ass motherfucking cigarette. And he just got the longest ash. And he was like, that's an SNL skit. And he had also pregnant in that ass.
Everything's in that. You know what, though? Now that you mention this, it's a tough question to answer because what is a secondary character on Curb? It's like a Mocha Joe.
Like Leon's right there. What's yours,
Mocha Joe? Yep. Mocha Joe's that's actually, that would be my answer is Mocha Joe.
Joe's good, and Ted Danson is cheating because he's good in everything, but I guess he technically qualifies here. Like he gets this genre. It takes a very special actor and comedian to be able to do this where they don't write a script and they just give basic like outlines and go. So probably Danson and Mocha Joe. I can't think of anybody
else. And the funk man then by that.
Yeah, that's it.
Like that's the it, funk man is the greatest.
Ida Funkhauser Memorial when Larry's stealing the flowers. There's nothing better. And then also when Larry is crossing lines in terms of international relations, Funkhauser calls him out on it. There is never a better scene in any
decent too is Schwimmer. He actually had a pretty good arc in the middle there. It was good. It was good with the play. They did a good job with that one. But
the trail mix thing is freaking hilarious. With his dad's trail mix.
It's so good.
It's the best. Thank you, Curb. We're gonna tag you in it, so hopefully get a few more viewers. With that being said, we're on to the NFL draft. Brandon, Maddie, you're both Patriots fans, but I also will credit you. You're probably two of the most realistic fans and you know, seeing what's going on and not like rose-colored glasses like I am with my beloved Broncos. So what is your hope for the draft? Brandon, I'll start with you.
I'm one of these people too that I don't know better than Elliot Wolf and the people that have been doing this their whole lives professionally, you know. To me, you know, it's pretty simple. If you know that you want either Jaden Daniels or Drake May, and I don't know that JJ McCarthy is a good value at three. We can debate that on the side. But if you think one of those two guys, or even say one of the three, is your guy and you're confident in him, you take him. Like it's and I'm not going to argue it. I'm going to assume. Yep. And you got to look at not just Ron Wolf / Elliot Wolf. You got to look at the whole GM tree, John Dorsey and all those guys that have great track records drafting quarterbacks. Those guys have a lot of credibility. They might be the best coaching tree in NFL history for drafting quarterbacks. So if it's there, the only thing I would be mad about, I guess we could frame it like that, is if they drafted Marvin Harrison Jr. at three, because you have so many needs as the team. You have a horrific offensive line. You have no offensive weapons, and you have a stacked class in those two areas. This is, I think, the deepest class I've ever seen in both offensive line and wide receiver.
Agreed.
And if you with that many needs and with that many teams that want a quarterback that will overpay, if you take anything but a quarterback at three, that's the only thing I think is a misplay of the draft for the Patriots.
I love it, man.
Spot on. I would prefer, so if available. So I think Daniels and JJ McCarthy are probably ready to play right away, and Drake May for sure is not, which is the whole point of getting a Jacoby Brissett to give you a bridge year. Let him sit for a year. Let him learn. Let him figure it out while they acquire assets so that he can slide in year two. You waste 1 year of the five-year window, but it's probably better than wasting him completely, because you throw him right into the fire right away, he's not going to go very well. He just has to clean up some stuff, right? But projection-wise, he projects as a much better quarterback than both of those guys. Daniels has got Justin Fields 2.0 written all over him. Might be fun to watch. You're not going to win a Super Bowl with a guy like that because he just doesn't do all the things you need him to do. I don't think he can make all the throws. I think JJ McCarthy is just a guy who's like Purdy with a stronger arm and some wheels. So I'd like him to take May and let him sit until he's ready and then start to compile assets. Like use one of those second round picks on one of these receivers because you're going to get a good one there. Mm-hmm. And then load up the offensive line and the defense, then go get the receivers next year. Like it's the Lions' plan, basically.
Yeah, well, the point, too, with the quarterback in the five-year window, it's not even a five-year window. If you have him by year three, they're getting extended no matter what. So, like, you're extending early before you even get to the fifth-year option. Yes. And that's where, like, wide receiver, and I've seen Brock Bowers 10 to the Jets, like, and I was talking about, you know, oh, Brock Bowers would be fun at 12. It's not worth it. You get $6 million for a wide receiver in their fifth year or fourth year, rather, when they're high producing assets on the team.
How many tight ends in the last 10 drafts do you think turned out a 1,000-yard season and were an all pro? Taken in the first round.
Hawkinson.
Zero.
He's in a 1,000-yard season, does he? Yeah.
Zero. Yeah. Not a single guy. Zero. Njoku had one.
Laporta.
Njoku.
I mean, those are the guys.
Laporta was a later pick, though. He was second or third, right?
He was. Yeah, he wasn't a first rounder.
Yeah.
I
want to pick out something interesting that Maddie said, though, that I think is another thing that people overlook is like the quarterback, waiting on the quarterback doesn't happen. You know, like saying you're going to redshirt a guy for a year, that never happens. It was Patrick Mahomes and Jordan Love. And but
it's not a full year.
By week six or so, when you see Jacoby Brissett throwing the ball at the ankles of Kendrick Bourne for the 30th time, no one's going to want to put up with that. No one's going to show up at Foxborough. And the pressure is going to be overwhelming to get Drake May in there, and it's going to be too soon for him. So if you're going to draft Drake May, you better have the discipline to keep his ass on the bench for a year. He needs a year on the bench. The upside is absurd. And it's a really interesting quarterback class because I think in 2021, everyone wants to look at 2021 and see the perils of drafting quarterbacks early. But when you look at it, that was a really weird year. Wilson played a friggin' 1AA schedule. Yep. Trey Lance hadn't played football in 18 months? By the time he got on the field.
COVID year, too, they were coming.
I'm saying, because the COVID year. The other thing, though, too, is that I think what's really interesting about this draft class, outside of Caleb Williams, who is a freak of nature and I look at him at like Kyler Murray, you know, like he's got all of the traits, not a very similar player, but has more traits than Kyler Murray did. But I just don't see him as a plus leader. I think he can be like, you know, like Aaron Rodgers was never a plus leader. Let's be honest.
Right.
You know, but you can succeed, but you've got to be ridiculous. You've got to be Aaron Rodgers to succeed like that.
Yeah.
And you're seeing it with Kyle Murray. He's not really a plus leader. But the other four three guys are all plus. And I'll throw Penix in there and Nix for that matter.
And they're all leaders.
Great leaders. They're great kids.
Yeah.
They're all athletic too, which is really interesting. Although Penix really isn't on, and he's not
athletic. He'll get exposed a bit.
But they all have these really weird set of traits though. They're great leaders. They've got great feet, and some are really athletic. Most are really athletic. But they just have these weird things. Like Daniels can't throw the ball over the middle. He can't do anything, but if there's any pressure, he either takes a sack or guns it and doesn't even look to try to throw
it. Or takes off and gets Sonic the Hedgehog smashed by a linebacker because he doesn't know how to get down. Like that can't last at 190 pounds.
Yeah. Drake May is just throws these weird incompletions and had a terrible second half to his season last year. JJ McCarthy throws everything on a line. His highlight reel of those deep throws sucks. Yeah, there were completions, but like it's like he doesn't have any touch at all.
But with all the defenses being too high shelled now, does that make a McCarthy more valuable because he can hit those intermediate throws at any time when defenses are just begging you to throw underneath? Nobody wants to get beat over the top.
Here's my problem with McCarthy. And I was thinking about an analogy about this the other day because he's one of those guys that like he didn't throw the ball much, as we know. And part of that was because he was on a good team. You can't really fault him there. But part of it was because Jim Harbaugh wants to play like it's 1950.
He wants to establish it hard.
Yeah. He does. But he's kind of like, it's kind of like that running back that gets, you know, like remember Barber for the Cowboys, he'd get five yards of carry. It's like, well, if you only gave him 300 carries, he'd be the best.
Marion Barber, Minnesota.
You know?
Yep.
It's like, you get one of those guys that like it's diminishing returns. Like if you use them all that often and everyone looks at these stats for JJ McCarthy, where he's like really good on third downs and fourth down for that matter. Yep. Those are like your special package plays when you run an offense like Michigan.
Yeah.
So it's like you're only running like 12 of those plays a year.
And those are the plays where if you get picked off, it's less important. You know, it's never good to get picked off or sacked, but third and fourth down, you might as well.
Like the punts, right? Yeah, it's like a secondary, like going forward on fourth and eight, right? Yeah. Like
you've got to drop.
Those are your mega schemed up Harbaugh plays. Like Drake May had to make 10 of those plays a game, you know, and so it's like there's diminishing returns when you actually have to be the guy and throw the ball 30 times.
What happens if the Commanders take May second, which will be a disaster? That's not going to go well for them. And Daniels is sitting there at three and the Raiders call because Antonio Pierce was the one that recruited him to Arizona State, remember? And he's been making all kinds of noise about that's where he wants to play. What kind of an offer would it take for you to move out as the Pats of three from the Raiders? And do you think it's possible?
For the Raiders? Absolutely. I mean, I think you need three ones. I think the starting price, well, actually what I would want with the Raiders, I personally think this draft, and I'm going to make my statement here. This draft is going to go down as the deepest draft in NFL history.
I think 25 to 50 are spot on. I think if you have multiple picks there, you're winning.
And that's why I'm bullish on the Cardinals, and I don't think they're trading back. They already have eight, nine picks in the first three rounds. Yeah. They're going to load up.
And they need to because that offense is bereft of weapons. Yeah.
They have to take a receiver. They can't trade.
They need it. But I think for that, if you get three ones, but I'd almost rather take the Raiders second than a one next year because this draft is so good. And then you got to do the Monty Austin for it.
Yep.
And you got to trade back and then get back in because right now you've got four quarterbacks and you've got four super elite players in this draft. You get the three top receivers and Joe Alt. And if you can get back and you've got number eight sitting right there, the Falcons would love to trade back and get their pass rusher. They're good on offense.
Not taking a receiver. Yep.
Exactly. So it's a perfect trade partner to get back into that money zone and get one of those either elite players or maybe JJ McCarthy slips. Who knows?
McCarthy.
You're going to get your guy there. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're getting Rome Odunze and stockpiling draft picks, like Rome Odunze is a top five pick most years. Yep. You know, Malik Nabers is the best player in this draft. Like if he's there, you do a backflip.
Yep.
Joe,
I think the Cardinals could still take him at four. They're taking a receiver. It's one of those two guys. They're not moving. They're not on the board. So on FanDuel and DraftKings, they're minus 400, 500 to take a receiver first. And they don't have a line for if they're going to make their first pick outside of the top 10. Nobody believes they're moving. There's no reason for them to move. You can't trade back and then hope you end up with a Rome Odunze when the Bears can just trade up and get him because they're going to need somebody when Allen is gone next year. So it's not the whole trade back scenario stuff is like, just trade to nine and you'll be there for you. Like teams can trade up ahead of you.
It's like the Madden strategy.
Yeah,
right?
You have
like,
to stay and take your guy. They can't go into the season without an alpha.
But I will not be mad with a trade back for the Patriots. No one should be mad with a trade back this year because there are 50 – first round talent type players. There are 50 players in this draft. Like if you, I want as many top 50 picks as I can get. And it's not just like you legitimately like the offensive line, especially and the offensive line, I think is this year in the NFL was unwatchable because of offensive line play.
Yeah.
I think that's a direct relation to the number of practices they're allowed to have. Offensive linemen need time together and you could legitimately all the way up to the fourth round, you could rebuild your offensive line. There are going to be NFL caliber Pro Bowl starters up until the fourth, probably even the fifth.
It's a bumper crop because of COVID. These guys all stay back.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. This is the draft you want to get into. And that's the thing. Like, everyone looks at the draft like they're fungible. They are not. No. And you have to look at the level of talent year to year. Last year's draft sucked.
Like, imagine you were in the Pickett draft and you needed a quarterback, and it's like, I guess we'll go with Pickett. It's like everybody knew he stunk. It wasn't a secret.
You have to look at that. Everyone just looks at these hit rates. Oh, well, your hit rate on a quarterback in the top 20 is this. It's like, you can't play that game because every draft is different. And I really think this is going to go down. It's not going to be like high end, like the 89 draft where you had Barry Sanders, Troy Aikman, Derek Thomas, Deion Sanders. But there are some high end players, but you're going to have like the offense. Man, do I love these. I love offensive linemen. And this is just interior and exterior, just
it's how teams can turn it around.
Hang on to your thought on the offensive lineman too, because I've got a couple for you. But on the defensive side, like, and we talked about 2021 a little bit, you don't have Micah Parsons or Surtain, right? Like, there are not those guys this year that are like the clear leaders on the defensive side. There are maybe four edge rushers. There's Latu, there's Verse, there's Chop, who I'm not as big a fan of, and I'm forgetting someone on the edge rusher side. But and then there are four
Dallas Turner.
Verse is probably the best all around. And then there are four cornerbacks with Mitchell and Arnold and Wiggins. I'm thinking of someone else too.
And Dejon ran really well too.
Yeah,
he's going to Baltimore. Just lock it in. They got a bunch of connections there.
Those are where you can feast in the late teens, mid 20s, where a lot of these guys are going to fall, and they're going to be maybe not all pros, but they're going to probably all, not all of them are going to hit, but make a Pro Bowl.
But let's talk about that real quick, right? Like, exactly, make a Pro Bowl. Because to your point earlier, Kasten, too, like, we got into this world where it's like, if you don't find me a Jamar Chase every first round, then the draft's a failure. Not the case. Like, these teams are building. Yep. The Texans are building through a couple of elite guys and a bunch of dudes who just get the job done. You're not going to have you can't build a juggernaut all-star team in football. It doesn't exist. It's not possible. It's not like the NBA. So you're going to get a bunch of guys that are going to kick a bunch of dudes who've been hanging around the league that shouldn't be in the league anymore out. There's going to be a lot of guys out of jobs in about a month.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, it's going to be really interesting. And I guess you're asking like what we do on defense for the Patriots. I don't think you do much in this draft. The defense is good. The defense is really good, actually. And they played two studs together. Everyone got hurt in the secondary last year.
Mm-hmm.
Christian they pieced it together.
Gonzalez looked good.
Gonzalez is elite. He's awesome. They're getting,
I want you to calm down about him being elite. Like,
he is.
Gonzalez?
He's going to be.
He played 6 weeks.
Yeah, but he's going to be.
I mean, you got to call it what it is. He was playing against AJ Brown and Jalen Waddle, and he didn't play Tyreek Hill as much because for whatever reason, Jonathan Jones is like the cheat code against Tyreek Hill. I don't know why that is, but for some reason he is.
Just stays on his head. It's quick.
It's amazing. Like, he's the only guy in the NFL that can cover Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
And he's not even that good. No. But Christian Gonzalez, if he was a Bronco, you'd be already calling him Surtain too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No one is.
You loved him the minute he missed. When they made that pick, you were like, oh, that's a great – they got good value there. Like, he should never have been available.
He shouldn't have been. You're good. No, I was jealous. I was jealous. I love cornerbacks.
That's what we're here for. We're going to work it out, right? Let's talk through it.
So getting to that point, like, players and positions I love, one guy that I am really excited about in this draft, and he's going to go in the 20s, maybe 30s, Cooper DeJean from Iowa. He's a safety in a cornerback's body, a cornerback in a safety's body. And he is, I think there is no way that he fails. I think his worst case scenario is he is Eric Weddle.
That's the exact comp I had for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Guys that you like, Maddie and Brandon, anyone that stands out?
Go ahead, Brandon. I'm thinking. I have a couple.
Just on the defensive side.
Yeah. Either side.
Yeah. I'm blanking on his name, but I'm really interested in two players. So Braden Fisk, I love. Like, I just think the way that guy, like, and I don't put much stock in combine workouts, like, but the way that guy moved, I was like, man, that guy, like, and he can play, he plays hard. I'm trying to think, like he's got kind of like a little Ed Oliver in him, like only only with with a better motor, because he's kind of compact and he can move. So I'm a huge fan of his. I like the beady guy, the guard from Kansas State. I just love that guy. Just the way he moves his feet. He's one of those big dancing bears. No one can get around him. I'm a huge fan of him. And the guy I'm drawing a blank on is the Yale left tackle. I find really interesting.
Oh, Amagaji or
he's got a really hard pronounced name.
There are a lot of
Gibby. You should have pronounced that one. Why don't you take a stab at it?
I could barely get Tarvarius Ward in.
But I mean, he's got the like prototypical tackle body. He's got these ridiculously long arms. But he played against guys that are going to be working for JP Morgan in a couple weeks, you know? So like, you know, so he's like, you know, I mean, you don't really know, cause he played at Yale, but man, he moves well, he tested really well. Like, I think that's a guy you get in the third or fourth round and you're just like, you struck gold. I was really impressed with him. So those are kind of the guys I'm looking at right now.
I Gibby, you know, this, I spend a lot more time on the offensive side of the ball because that's for like super flex dynasty drafts, things like that. That's what matters. But in terms of defensive, I like Nate Wiggins a lot. I think he's probably going to get steamed up into the middle of the first. Right now he's looking like late first, but I mean, checks all the boxes, elite athlete, great cover skills. He's gotten better every year. Long, like 44.4 passer rating when targeted last year. He only gave up 176 yards and ACC was down, right? It wasn't as big of a year there for them, but still like, I don't even care. You're playing against guys who are going to make the league. So I'm a pretty big fan. I think he's a good quarterback. We both have been on Mitchell for a while, way back. I feel like we were talking about Mitchell in like January. Friends, I remember seeing him pre-senior bowl. I remember seeing him playing some games and you could tell like he was playing a different kind of football than the rest of the guys in the MAC. So again, insurance.
Yeah, he's got, like, he's aggressive that, and it translates.
Yeah.
He's got Orbs-ish. That Denzel Ward fluidity to his game.
Yeah.
You know, it just like, there's no, like, he may not be the greatest playmaker, but he's going to stay in front of everyone. Like he's going to be on your hip all game. Yeah. And that guy's can't miss.
And my everybody needs a gift.
Oh no. My favorite new term that I've been seeing, like when I've been reading the comps and, you know, scouting reports, is ankle flexion. Everyone's talking about ankle flexion. NBA, it was, you know, wingspan 20 years ago. And now everyone's talking about like his ankle flexion, posterior, anterior. I'm like, what are we talking about?
You know what's funny about all this? Like, I was listening to Jeremiah today. I don't know what podcast he was on. And he says his big board is his eyes, but his mock is like his ears, what he hears, because he's so plugged in, him and those guys. So like, and he said his top, to Kasten's point earlier, his top 50 this year is for now, where it is right now, based off of all the other drafts before it, is stronger. There's just a lot more guys who are going to produce and not just be like nickel corners or sub package linebackers or slot guys only. Like, everyone's going to have to pick a few receivers from like receiver 6 to 12 that they want to plant a flag on. People like AD Mitchell, some people like Ladd McConkey, like some of those guys are going to hit like percentage wise, just based off of what we've seen. Some of those guys are going to land in good spots and they're going to hit, like, you know, there's a lot of landing spots that would make a lot of sense, but like, what if AD Mitchell, a guy who really, you know, looks the part, but doesn't really run the crispest routes, like still needs some work with his hands and things like that.
DJ Brown.
What if you send him to Buffalo and he's Allen's guy and he's just chucking him the ball? Like, you don't know, like, talent wins out, but the situation plus talent is like where you got to really start thinking about it.
We're going to be, as AFC followers, we're going to be pissed off with who the Chiefs and Bills get at the end of the first round. We're all going to be like, just like when the Bills got Keen last year and we're all like, fuck, you know,
we just
like,
pray one of those teams takes Keon Coleman and we can forget about him because he can't separate and there's no way he's going to be successful. I just hope.
I'm with you on that. I don't see.
He can't make it.
10 years ago, Keon Coleman would have been a top 10 pick. Yep. In today's NFL, if you can't, and listen, the upside of Keon Coleman is, he played basketball for most of his life and maybe he needs to learn how to run routes. I don't think his game speed is 4.6. I just don't think he knows how to run a 40. I think he's more of a 4.5 guy game speed wise. So I think his speed is adequate. He's really good at making guys miss. I actually went into this season thinking he was going to be probably like the third wide receiver.
Same.
Like I thought he was exceptional. Yep.
Yep.
But the stats, like the PFF stats on his separation are astoundingly bad.
Can't win that
way. I think his upside is, and I say this lovingly to Courtland Sutton, like his upside is 90% of Sutton, which is not a number one receiver. And I'll be, you know, transparent about that.
No. So it's just is what it is. Like, but there's a bunch of fun guys. You love Corley. Pearsall's getting a bunch of burn.
Love Corley. And McCaffrey in the fourth round, fifth round. Like, why not take a shot at a guy named McCaffrey?
Is he dating Caitlin Clark? No, he's dating somebody. There's like a McCaffrey.
He wants to. He's a McCaffrey.
Yeah.
I walked into that one. That's on me.
If you're a 22-year-old McCaffrey and you've got a girlfriend, you got to get your head fixed. Yeah,
I like too at receiver, deep off-field issues, kind of has a Pickens vibe, but great route runner, attacks the ball, gets open. Like he could land somewhere and make a little bit of noise.
And you've got like late round guys like Bub Means that you could easily see carving out a really nice role in the NFL. I think the McCaffrey pick makes a lot of sense because he's kind of a hybrid, you know, like he's one of those guys, like, you know, like the Deebo Samuel
more inside outside.
And the thing is too, is I think too many guys like the Ladd McConkeys, Pearsalls are getting branded as slot receivers when I think they're more like, and obviously they're not this high end, but they're more like Cooper Kupp where they can play in multiple positions,
right?
You know, and this is going to be a fun wide receiver class.
Well, it's a ton of offensive talent, and I know we got to wrap up in a minute, but like, there aren't as many running backs, but there are a couple that I really like. There's Vidal from
Estime. You love Estime.
Troy. I don't love Estime, that big burly guy.
You
love Notre Dame. But Jalen Wright reminds me of like the Kamara Cook, you know, type of running back that is catching the ball out of the backfield. You know, you might see a 5.4 yards per touch type of average that just keeps moving the chains. But there's a lot of running back by committees type of guys this year that I think can add to a team and make an immediate impact.
It's a good year to wait and get a running back in the fourth or fifth where they should be taken and just wait. Like Brooks will go high. I think Benson's going to go high. We talked about this the other day when we were texting. Like those guys have enough to go high, but like there's going to be some running backs too, just to the same point we've been making. Like they're going to get taken in the fourth or the fifth to a situation where there isn't anybody. The Cowboys, if they don't take Brooks, whoever they draft is going to have a chance to win that job over Deuce Vaughn, who I think can actually, for a small guy, carry the load. But there's guys like Isaiah Davis, South Dakota State, who's getting like a bunch of action too. So it's good. It's good draft.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Brandon, who is your pounding the table for this guy?
Man, well, I guess, I mean, Malik Nabers. I mean, that is...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, like, I don't think you can say enough about how good Malik Nabers is. He runs some of the best routes I've ever seen at a college, like Devontae Smith level, only just more devastating. The moves
suddenness.
His suddenness, he's angry, he's a dog. The dude wants to kick your ass every play. No one's ever run a better wheel route in the history of football. It's unbelievable. Like I hate saying that, but it's true. Yep. Those wheel routes he breaks off are just unbelievable. So Malik Nabers is the best player in this draft. I think he is one of those guys that you can't even compare him to other players because he's that unique.
He's got the size too. Perfect size. 6 feet, 200 is exactly what you want. That's a promo. That's like premier size for a receiver.
I love him. I think he's the perfect player. And then, but I'll throw one more that's not so high end out there. I'm drawing a blank. The Oklahoma tackle.
Gibby, you're the tackle guy.
It's not Mims. Latham.
No. Well, I can't think of his
Latham's
name.
Latham's Alabama.
Yeah.
We'll find it, Maddie. Who's your guy?
We'll come back. Okay, depending on how deep you want me to go. I do like, so I'm probably going to regret this one, but I really feel like Javon, and I don't want to do this because I was watching really quickly too. Like they were showing that clip of the GM, Les Snead and McVay talking about Puka last year, right when they were making the pick.
Well, you also nailed A-Chain.
Oh yeah. I knew A-Chain was going to be a stud. And once he went to Miami, I was like wheels up. Cause that's exactly, that's when like a fit and a player are perfect together.
Yep.
Like that couldn't, anybody who didn't see that didn't want to see it because they wanted to look how small he was. But I think that's a great point, though. You nailed it. Putting these guys in spots where they can succeed. So I think Javon Baker is a guy that I really like. I know there's warts. I know he's probably outside the top 10 of receivers, but I feel like if he slides onto a team where he doesn't have to be the guy and he can be like Gabe Davis light to start and then grow into a little bit more, I think you're going to get good value. So I'm a big fan of his game. Like anybody who was recruited to Alabama has to have some just God-given talent to be able to go get the football. So there's actually some guys that we can talk about this another time, some guys that I'm just like not really in on at all, but I think he's a big one. And I actually like Jalen Wright a lot with you from Tennessee.
Yeah.
I think he's got,
I mean, I named a bunch of guys, but Matt Guncalvis from Pittsburgh, the tackle, is born to be a swing tackle that starts 12 games a year. And you can get him in the fourth round. And I love it. He only started three games. He had some injury issues this year, but an absolute mauler. He's played both left and right tackle. And I actually think like he will start at some point in his career for 7 years. Go get Matt Guncalvis.
Yep. And your guy, Michael Pratt.
All right, who is your guy from Oklahoma, Cass?
Yeah, Tyler Guyton. I drew a blank there.
Oh, yeah.
He played on the right, and I might overrate the Senior Bowl a little bit, but, you know, going back to, like, Brandon Graham, I've always had my Senior Bowl guys, and he's one – I like the mean streak offensive tackles. I don't like the nice guys.
Yep.
He's got a mean streak. He played on the right, but plenty athletic to play on the left in the NFL. I just think that's a guy you plug in there for 10 years and you're just like, how is this guy not a top 10 pick? I think guys like Latham are really Mims. Overrated. Latham, Mims is a project. I mean, I don't think anyone's confusing him for a polished tackle prospect at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a fan of Latham and Olufoshanu.
Yeah,
his upside is Nate Solder. His downside is out of the league for years.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Oh, like, that's another great point. Ozzie Newsome always says, like, in the first round, second round, just hit doubles. Don't hit if you strike out, it's a disaster. You hit a double, no big deal. That's pretty good. Home runs are going to happen, but that's an outlier. If you strike out in the first round, it sets the team back a good 2 years. Like, you have to at least hit a double. And Olufoshanu is a guy who could be a strikeout for sure.
Especially in a draft like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
and Paxton Lynch never happened.
No, it happened. Yeah, it's still happening. What is he in the USFL or whatever it's called?
He's wherever he wants to be.
He's out. He's done the insurance.
Yeah. Brandon, come back.
Man.
This is awesome. We are kicking off NFL draft week. Thank you so much for joining us.
Man. It was fun.
What a blast.
Great to hang out with you guys. Talk soon.
Thanks, buddy.
See you guys.